This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to PopCast, a weekly audio dialogue between Pakistan and the West. We're podcasting from Seattle, Washington, USA on a beautiful summer evening here in Seattle, June 26, 2007. This is Volume 3, Installment 17 of PopCast. I'm Ethan Casey, author of Alive and Well in Pakistan.
And I am Nasser Aziz, producer of PopCast.
And with us, as usual, is Asad Faizi.
Hello.
No, more than that.
Hello, hello.
There you go.
That's Asad's new signature.
Hello, hello. Yeah. Finally.
Before anything else, an invitation as always to participate in podcast. Phone our number at country code 1, area code 206-965-9277 or Skype ID podcast and leave a voicemail on any topic that's relevant to Pakistan and the West. And I should also take this opportunity to mention that we're very close to the first anniversary of PopCast, which was
July 11th, 2006 is when we started. And that was the unfortunate day when the Indian train bombings occurred, right?
That's right. Indeed.
That is the same exact day that we started.
And yeah, I remember, Nasser, you and I had this program on this whole terrorism in South Asia. Yeah.
And it was purely a coincidence. Let me remind you that.
That's true. That's right. That was nearly a year ago now. A lot of history has happened in the year in between. There's been...
And we have captured most of it.
We certainly have.
We have covered a lot of ground and there's more to go.
So this is the first of several invitations we're going to be sending out. One of the special particular reason you might want to note our phone number, 206-965-9277, is that we would really like you to phone in and give us your views on what, Nasser?
Feedback, how we're doing, what we should be covering, what should we be talking about, and of course, you can just call us to congratulate us, I guess.
Anything you want to say about PopCast in its first year and the topics that we cover, call in and we're going to put those together and make a show out of them.
Right.
So, Asad, you've got our roundup.
Yes. You know, we have a mix of news today. Unfortunately, some very tragic news and some happy ending. The southern coastal part of Pakistan is unfortunately been hit by the worst cyclone in the history, Cyclone Yumain. It has already killed over 200 people in the largest city, Karachi. And now it's moving towards the coastal lines of Balochistan. More than 10,000 people have been rendered homeless in Balochistan. Yesterday, the news was that another 20 people died due to that. The complete villages, the fishermen's villages, people whose livelihood depend upon fishing in the Indian Ocean, they have been completely devastated and destroyed. Their ships have been destroyed. Pakistan Navy has been relentlessly rescuing people. They have rescued more than 100 people. The last I read, and the Pakistan Navy ship has rescued a couple of stranded ships. The situation is not very good in that part of the world. It's really bad in Karachi because there's acute power shortages in Pakistan, and with that, the situation has really become bad because people are now facing the storm for the last 3-4 days, and the major parts of the city are without any power for several days now. So it's a very miserable situation for the people of the southern part of Pakistan. Well, folks, here is the first sign of an independence of judiciary. For the first time in the history of Pakistan, the Supreme Court has actually questioned the conviction of a civilian by the military court. This guy, Imran Munir, has been picked up by the military intelligence agencies And he was actually tried for treason on the charges that he was, on the espionage charges that he was providing some state secrets to some foreign countries. And the Supreme Court ordered his production, but the military intelligence, in their arrogance, they have gone ahead, did a summary trial, put him through a summary trial, and sentenced him, for several years. Supreme Court has none of that. They asked these intelligence agencies to produce the man and bring all the evidence in the Supreme Court and let Supreme Court decide if that party, person was provided due process of the law, if he was given the proper defense, and if not, the Supreme Court is going to take action against those people. I think it's a great news. All those people who were skeptic about this, the whole issue of this judicial crisis, they should rest assured that we will hear more good news from our independent judiciary. Moving on, this whole issue of Lal Masjid, or the Red Mosque, as you know, we have covered it in bits and pieces over the last month or so. There is a radical Islamic clerics in Islamabad, right in the nose of the seat of the government, which have actually taken the law in their own hand, and they are making all kind of demands. They have become self-appointed police of vice and virtue, and they are going out and enforcing their own law. Captured some Chinese people, Chinese women who were running some massage parlors and stuff, and they said this kind of stuff cannot happen in Islamabad, and so they actually abducted them and took them inside, and they finally were released on government's intervention. But this has gone too far. We have in the same Pakistani society, we have two movements happening today. One is the lawyers movement, who is striving for the cause of judiciary, independence of judiciary, and justice in Pakistan, all within the norms of the constitution, within the law. And then on the other hand, we have these totally out of control radical Islamists who make the laws of their own, have absolutely no respect for the law, and people have spoken very clearly. They stand up and wait for hours for the Chief Justice of Pakistan, and they come out in millions and stand in 24 hours waiting for his procession. They love him, they shower him with rose petals. And these guys, on the other hand, the religious extremists of the Red Mosque, they have absolutely no supporters. Esamul Haq, which is a tennis player in Pakistan, has, for the first time in the history of Pakistan, has made qualified for Wimbledon tennis. And not only that, in his first round, he did beat Canada's number one, and he beat him in the straight set, 6-3, 6-4, and 7-6. And now he's in the second round. He's going to meet the former world number one, Murat Safin of Russia. And if he wins that, well, I'm sad to say that he's going to be meeting
Roger Federer.
So
I think Esamul Haq could really make history if he beats Murat Safin and then beats Roger Federer.
So it's not going to be sad after all.
That was all the news roundup from me for this program.
Thank you, Asad. So Ethan, did you not mention Esamul Haq in your book somewhere? There was some reference to him.
I did, in fact. I met a young. I played a lot of tennis in Lahore when I lived there in 2003, 2004, and in fact played almost daily doubles at the Lahore Gymkhana. And so there's quite a bit of tennis in my book, Alive and Well in Pakistan. And I got to be friends with a young man named Zulkader, who told me about Esamul Haq and told me that, as he said, actually, he said at the time, in 2003, he is doing well in doubles, but he has not yet made a mark in singles. And that remark of Zuli's came to mind yesterday when I looked at the Wimbledon draw. And to my shock, I saw that Issamul Haque had actually won his first round match at Wimbledon. And so apparently he has indeed begun to make his mark in singles. I think that's delightful.
Have you met him personally?
No, I haven't. I'd like to. He's he's well thought of in Pakistan by among tennis people there.
So it looks like he's making some mark.
He's starting to make his mark. And the personal background for me here is that I'm a big tennis fan. I play tennis recreationally and fairly well.
Not professionally,
if I may
say.
Not professionally. I'm too old to get into Wimbledon myself. Although I've seen Wimbledon in person several times, and it's a very special place for me. Mm. So it's just really, really great news to hear this about Issamul Haque.
It's a great news in for Pakistanis also, right? Because every time you talk about sports in Pakistan, people think about cricket. And so,
or once upon a time, hockey.
Well, yeah.
Once upon a time.
You're right. I mean, hockey is not that...
Actually, hockey is our national game.
Hockey is a national game.
And but we suck at it.
And we have been sucking it for a while now. I mean, we used to be really, really good in squash at one time.
Yeah.
And, you know Hashim Khan and...
Jahangir Khan
and...
the world record holder.
John Shear, actually.
Yeah.
But in tennis, this is the first time ever that a Pakistani has done anything. I mean, as... There are not too many people in Pakistan who play tennis.
Yeah.
Probably those who play tennis are in gymkhanas, as as Ethan mentioned.
So I'm playing on grass, which is the same surface as at Wimbledon.
Didn't he play with some Israeli once?
Played doubles with an Israeli, and that was controversial in Pakistan, just like when Imran Khan married Jemima, you know, similar controversy. And, you know, many people in Pakistan were saying, well, he shouldn't be playing with an Israeli. Other people said, well.
Yeah, anytime you mix Jews in Pakistan, it just becomes a bad.
That's right, But they were a pretty good doubles team, as I understand.
Did they win?
We'd have to look up the records to see what, if anything, they won. But they were,
I think,
they were
well pretty well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Okay.
Another factor here is that India actually has several very good players at the international level now. Mahesh Bhupathi is a very, very good doubles player who was Martina Navratilova's doubles partner in several of the last few years. So if he's good enough to play doubles with Martina Navratilova, then mixed doubles, then he must be pretty good. So
I wonder if he plays with her or somebody else, like, I don't know, some women player. That would be a controversy in Pakistan too, isn't
it? Well, I'm sure it would be. So watch this space and watch Issamul Haque.
Yeah.
Marat Safin, the Russian that he's going to play in the second round. And by the time you hear this, the second round will have taken place. And so there will have been a result between Issamul Haque and
hopefully
Marat
a good one too, huh?
Hopefully a good one for Pakistan. Safin is a monster. He's about 6'4", 6'5", huge, big bear of a guy with a very hot temper. He throws his racket a lot and yells and bellows a lot.
Mm.
And so that could well be entertaining. But when he loses his cool, he falls apart. So maybe we should hope that he'll lose his cool.
Assam is from Lahore. He can take him. Don't worry about that.
And that's when the Russian vodka comes in handy, right?
That's right, yeah. Now, if Assam can actually beat... if he... Inshallah can actually beat Marat Safin, then he'll be up against Roger Federer. Safin is a former world number one. He also has won two Grand Slam tournaments. He won the Australian Open in 2000 and he won the US Open in 2005. Actually, I think it's the other way around. So he's not anybody to trifle with, but if Issam can get past him, then he faces Roger Federer. I don't think there's anything more to say about that.
Yeah, in Pakistan, we say miracles do happen, so let's see.
Well, watch this space. Well, the cyclone was quite a story, and it's nice that we had a lighter note to touch on this week. But when you were telling us the news of the cyclone, Assad, I was really thinking about Hurricane Katrina, and I was also thinking about global warming and you know, the kinds of weather disasters that we are already facing and might well be facing many more of in the future. It sounds like it could really be maybe not only analogous to Katrina, but also analogous to the earthquake in October 2005.
Correct. And I think Pakistan as a country is not really prepared to respond to such kind of disasters, because we never had cyclones in that region, or at least not in Pakistan. And
Karachi is so unprepared for any natural disaster. I mean, we have been very blessed, as you were saying, Nasser, earlier on, that, you know, Pakistan, you know, fortunately has not really had to face a lot of disasters. I remember I've actually read the stories about how East Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh, was used to get hit by cyclone regularly pretty much every year or so, and it would cause a huge loss of life.
Still does.
But not
our problem anymore.
But not Pakistan. And so, I mean, we are very unprepared. And we should really, these are the natural weather cycles, and we should be more prepared for that.
It's good to hear that the Navy has been out rescuing people, and I'd like to know more about the extent of that and what they really are prepared for, what the Navy is prepared for.
Yeah, exactly. Last night they showed on TV a little bit, so Navy choppers. They're moving people who were, so they were showing that in one rescue operation, there were like seven or eight guys on a fishing boat. The boat got toppled, and they were, and the winds were like 125 kilometers an hour, something like that. And they were, struggling to stay alive, and the Navy chopper comes in and they rescue them. So I think naval ships also are out there looking for stranded ships. I think they have rescued at least two merchant ships already. So they're doing a great job.
Again, this is Tuesday, June 26, 2007. By the time you hear this, it'll be several days at least from now, and there will be developments in that story. It's already too late for the several hundred people we know are dead.
But considering
hopefully this will not be on the scale of the earthquake.
Yeah, considering the magnitude of the cycle, and I think the loss of life has been pretty much minimal, actually, if you think about it. I mean, loss of a life is a loss of life, but sure. Still, you know.
Sure, but, you know, like, if you consider Karachi, it's the most developed and most urbanized city with the best infrastructure in Pakistan. For 230 people to die in less than an hour, that's not, that still is a huge number. And as a matter of fact, a lot of these deaths happened because people were either driving on the streets or they were stranded and huge billboards fell on them. And, you know,
and the power lines, I heard.
And so the thing is that, I think this, the high court or the provincial high court has already taken sumo to action on that. And they're actually going after and probing why so many people died so quickly in less than an hour. Like what happened there, and who were actually responsible putting up these huge, humongous, billboards and all these signs, marketing signs, you know, and so recklessly. I think there has to be a probe into that. And if those people are found guilty, they should be brought to justice.
It could have been worse, but remember, this Karachi is a city of 16 plus million people, so still it's not too bad, I would say. But again,
at least not yet. Watch this space. And speaking of justice, the story of the Supreme Court, I think, is impressive and encouraging. What comes to my mind is the contrast with the United States Supreme Court, which just this week showed its
true colors
as a lackey of the Bush regime, and made three rulings that really just
What are those rulings, Ethan?
Well, I'll just quote a paragraph from the editorial published in the New York Times today, June 26. The New York Times editorial says, quote, Chief Justice Roberts and the four others, who Chief Justice Roberts was nominated and made Chief Justice by Bush just last year. He pretty much came out of nowhere to become, he wasn't even a justice in the Supreme Court. Now he's the Chief Justice, and he's a right-winger and handpicked by Bush. Chief Justice Roberts and the four others in his ascendant block used the next-to-last decision day of this term to reopen the political system to a new flood of special interest money, to weaken protection of student expression, and to make it harder for citizens to challenge government violations of the separation of church and state. In the process, the reconfigured court extended its noxious habit of casting aside precedents without acknowledging it. Insincere judicial modesty scored by Justice Antonin Scalia, another right-winger, in a concurring opinion. This is an updated version, an even more beholden and reactionary version of the same court that brought Bush into power in the first place in 2000 in the Bush versus Gore decision. The Supreme Court in the United States seems to be becoming permanently a mouthpiece of the executive, of the reactionary executive branch. And I think it's striking that in Pakistan, precisely the opposite seems to be happening.
Yeah, and just to read a small portion from the article, it says here that on Monday, the Supreme Court questioned the conviction of a civilian, Imran Munir, by the military court, and observed that any prosecution under the army law should meet principles of natural justice as enshrined in different judgments of the Supreme Court. And it goes on to say the Pakistan Army Act is required to be adhered to in the light of the Supreme Court judgments wherein the principles of natural justice has been interpreted. So it seems that Pakistan, you know, Ethan, in the end of the day, the judiciary anywhere in the world has to really stand up and exert its own independence. It's a dangerous and very slippery slope. 60 years ago in Pakistan, when Justice Munir and his Supreme Court sided with the establishment, of course, against the Constitution, and instead of exerting themselves as the third arm of the state, they actually acted as an extension of the executive branch and acted as a tool. And what actually ended up happening is that during the course of time, they lost all respect and all power. And for the last few years in Pakistan, Supreme Court judiciary was the least effective part of the state organ. Now they have actually taken a turn, and now they're trying to exert themselves and so becoming the real. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good for them. Good and for this Pakistan. Is, yeah, and, so, and not so good for America, what's happening here.
Well,
with
I was going to say, as a novice and an average Joe, to me, it seems like Pakistan's judicial system is moving towards more democratic reforms and independent judiciary movement. And quite the opposite is happening in the U.S. And whatever's happening in Pakistan is not because of U.S.'s influence. It's because of the people power. I mean, that's pretty much what is going on, and as far as we understand. And
it seems to be.
And it's very sad to see what's happening in the U.S. and how this U.S. Administration, especially the Bush's administration, is just twisting judiciary's arm and just getting the stuff out.
And this is, of course, the same week when Vice President Dick Cheney asserted that he is not part of the executive branch.
Yeah, whatever happened to those CIA, those documents they were going to release and all that?
I don't know, but yeah,
The headings were the CIA was going to...
Well, the CIA has exposed some stuff, and I'm not up on that story, and that's a story in its own right. But what's significant, what's also significant, is that the Vice President of the United States is asserting that he doesn't have to release his own email correspondence because he claims not to be part of the executive branch.
Neither part of the judiciary nor executive, something like that.
Yeah,
right?
And actually many columnists were having great fun with this today. There were several columns in the Washington Post that I thought were darkly hilarious. Mm-hmm. One of the columnists said that the framers of the Constitution, such as James Madison and Benjamin Franklin, would be appalled to, and so, then he went on to say that, you know, Madison and Franklin did not return phone calls today by press time.
So what I'm gathering here is, as a U.S. citizen, no matter what branch he sits in, he's above the law.
That's what he claims.
I think that's effectively what
that's certainly what he's claiming, which essentially means that he's claiming to be a dictator.
Okay.
So, congratulations that your country seems to be moving away from dictatorship.
Well, congratulations to you, because we had our civilian martial law administrator as Zulfikar Ali Bhutto in 1971.
I think,
and now you have your own civilian martial law administrator.
You know, what's going to happen is the American administration is going to hire some Pakistani contractors from the old judicial system so we can help you with this whole new dictatorial laws and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I have some names for you.
Well, after we get off the air, I'll take those names and phone numbers
and forward them to the Bush
administration. Pass them on to President Bush.
We should get 10% cut of that, too.
Yeah.
We do have a voicemail from Rizwan Nasser of Seattle, and he is commenting about our last podcast. And he has some interesting views or different views compared to what we mentioned.
Let's hear him.
Rizwan Nasser from Sammamish, Washington. This was volume 3, number 16, was a pretty interesting cast as usual. My comment is regarding the response from the people of Pakistan to the Chief Justice of Pakistan, Iftikhar Chaudhry's reception. Like when he is traveling from a place to another, people are coming out on the streets. We have never seen this before. But have we ever thought why is this? It's all because of the free television station and channels that we have, multiples of them, and they are covering all these events. His movement from Islamabad to Lahore, from Islamabad to Faisalabad, and all this live. And when people see this on their television, they'll come out on the streets. They come out to look at the Chief Justice and look at themselves as well. So it is all kudos to the media that's covering these events it's not the people. People do not care about the Chief Justice. They have more concern about their daily lives and the economy, to put bread and butter on their tables. That's what their concern is. They don't really care about the judiciary and so on and so forth. So it's the free media that's what is causing all this, and whoever in the next government that comes in after Musharraf, the so-called democratic governments that we've had and we will have in the future, the first thing they're going to do is curtail these things. I mean, even at Nawaz Sharif's time, we had NTM, but they could not do any news. So the free media is what is making all these news and giving Chief Justice Iftikhar Chaudhry this boost. So it's not really him. It's the media that's doing this. The other thing is we talked about Imran Khan. Well, interesting thing here is Imran Khan is not kosher. Either he has some agendas too. Meeting Nawaz Sharif and Benazir in London was, that takes the credibility away from Imran Khan, because these are the people he would be against, and he would talk against these people. Now he's meeting with them to form alliances with them against Musharraf, and Imran Khan claims that Jinnah was his. Is the only politician as his hero, but if Jinnah is his hero, then he should have supported Musharraf, because Musharraf's agenda was same as Jinnah's. He wanted a free and fair Pakistan, in the sense that he wanted to give minorities and women the same rights that Jinnah wanted, and. But he never got support from people like Imran Khan. If Imran Khan would have supported Musharraf, he wouldn't have to take people from Nawaz Sharif's party to run his government. You have to have people. So Imran Khan has lost credibility as well to some extent. Maybe And the other thing is, he only has one seat. His party only has one seat in the National Assembly, and I guess he's going to lose that too in the next elections. So these are my thoughts. Hey, great show. Keep going. Hopefully this will change the way Pakistan is, and hopefully we'll make the difference. Thank you.
Thanks to Rizwan for that voicemail. What music do we have, Nasser?
Asad, he brought me this CD called Musti by Ali Zafar. He's a very good and emerging young singer from Pakistan.
I absolutely love his voice and his music. I think he has a lot of promise.
How do you translate Musti into English? What does that mean? It means wildness? craziness, jiveness, grooviness.
Yeah, like, is he a wild and crazy guy like Steve Martin?
So what is musty? I mean, explain.
Well, I don't know exact translation, but you know, like when you are very happy and in an elated state, in a state of ecstasy, this is, you know, like maybe that's loosely translated into musty.
So all those ecstasy consumers out there, you can probably relate to this album. So let's play song number one called Musty.
All right.
मस्ती के दिन है चलो झूमे और गाए हम सारे जो मिल जाए तो बोलो फिर क्या हो मोहब्बत जान मांगे कभी इनकार ना हो हमारी जीत में भी किसी की हार